Hello, I am Sarah Bassler-Millar, partner in and chair of Drinker Biddle & Reitz Employee Benefits and Executive Compensation Practice. Welcome to DBR's new podcast series, ERISA at 45. During this series, we will explore how ERISA and related laws have impacted the employee benefits landscape and what you should be thinking about in the months and years ahead. Today, I'm speaking with Heather Abrego, a partner in our LA office, and we are talking about retirement plans. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you, Sarah.
As we look at this being the 45th anniversary of the enactment of ERISA, how has the world of retirement plans evolved over the years?
Well, Sarah, I think I've seen it evolve from my perspective as someone who has the opportunity to attend committee meetings and have conversations with my plan sponsors and those that administer and operate the plans within the companies. And I have definitely seen a shift on fiduciary compliance. And when I say that, I really talk about looking at their employees, looking at the participants in the plan, and making sure that when the employees retire, that they have enough money in their accounts to be able to support them through retirement. This has definitely been a shift in the past where they talk about the more detail operation of the plan when they've gone into discussions about, you know, administration and plan design issues. And we're really seeing them look at how can we make sure and what plan design issues can we look at with respect to the plan to make sure that at the end of the day, the employee actually has money and they're saving enough money to be able to help them through retirement. This also clearly has been a focus, you know, as we've seen over the past many years, defined contribution plans have really been what has been lasting. We've seen a lot of defined benefit plans either freeze or really kind of, to be honest, become non-existent. So plan sponsors are looking at ways to make sure that the participants' accounts last and what can they do to help their employees do that. Another issue that we've definitely see evolve is the idea of fees and expenses. I think that in the past, when I first started practicing, there was a lot of talk about revenue sharing. And, you know, that was kind of the initial idea of how to make the plan expenses, how to pay for plan expenses. And in the course of the shift, we've definitely now seen with the DOL regulations on fee disclosure and transparency and making sure that everybody knows who's getting what, both on the plan sponsor side and the participant side, being more transparent at fees has caused participants and plan sponsors to be looking at the plan, seeing what the fees and expenses are. And from a plan sponsor side, how can we work on making sure that, you know, the fees and expenses are reasonable? And also, how can we reduce some of the cost for the benefits of the participants? So that's definitely, I think, a shift that I have seen in my practice.
What are the current trends you're seeing with respect to retirement plans?
I think one of the hottest trends right now, or let's just put it this way, topics that is being discussed is the Department of Labor and the concept of missing participants. We have seen some guidance come out definitely from the Department of Labor on what to do with missing participants. And we also started to see the PBGC come out with helping define contribution plans, deal with the issue of missing participants. So this is definitely something that plan sponsors are talking about. We're talking to our plan sponsors about, record keepers are talking about, and really putting into action, what do we need to do with respect to these missing participants and how do we address it and what do we do? So that is a current trend, an issue that's being discussed. Another issue is the idea of, and it's coming in the concept of the default funds. This is where plan sponsors can have a qualified default investment fund so that when participants don't direct their investment, there's a fund that can be allocated to those investments when they don't direct their account. And in the past, we've seen definitely the evolution of the stable value fund being that qualified default investment fund. And then maybe 5 or so years ago, it started to be kind of the target date, whether or not, you know, based on someone's retirement, how the investments would be allocated. And we're starting to see now a shift towards collective trust and definitely a discussion among the investment advisors with their plan committees about whether or not a collective trust as that default investment fund would be appropriate. And, you know, how does all that work and the fees and expenses? So that is definitely a trend I'm seeing occur with plan sponsors in their committee meetings and in their discussions. And then lastly, I think what's also happening is that plan sponsors are becoming more proactive with respect to the administration of their plans. And we're seeing that in the form of compliance audits. I think over the course of the last year or two, I've had more plan sponsors coming to me proactively saying, you know, let's look at our plan, sometimes with respect to a certain issue, for example, compensation, you know, making sure that the plan document is consistent with what HR understands compensation to mean. And then also looking at it from a more holistic standpoint, some of the policies and procedures that maybe they haven't looked at for a while, for example, quadro policies or loan policies. Are those documents and policies and procedures, number one, do they exist? Sometimes they don't exist, and that's always nice to know. And then second, if they do exist, are they consistent with how they're being implemented? So kind of the idea of the plan sponsors coming in and looking to see if, you know, they're complying and taking it upon themselves to do those audits.
So you talked about a couple of different trends, missing participants and all the conversations happening there, the increasing sophistication of plan sponsors as they're looking at investment alternatives that they make available under their plans, and then also an increasing awareness of compliance issues and looking at plan documents and related policies and procedures. How are all of these different trends impacting how employers offer benefits to their employees?
So I think definitely what we're seeing with respect to missing participants is a focus on, well, how do we find the missing participants? And plan sponsors are reaching out to their record keepers or TPAs to see if that's something that they can assist with. And in some circumstances, they're also having to go to third-party vendors to be able to find missing participants. And the reason for that is because one of the requirements is that you use search mechanisms to find certain missing participants. And this isn't something that plan sponsors have done in the past or have maybe utilized their record keeper to do in the past. So this is something that's definitely impacting employers in, number one, figuring out who is missing. And then number two, figuring out how to find them if they're missing. And number three, well, what do we do about somebody who we know now is missing? What do we do with their account? Can we forfeit it? Do we have to, you know, send it to the PBGC, or what are some of the alternatives with respect to that? So that's definitely something impacting employers. And the other thing that we're seeing is with the favorable determination letter, it's not necessarily impacting the benefits, but without having that safety net from the Internal Revenue Service in the form of a favorable determination letter, as plan sponsors are amending their plans, they're finding it difficult to manage, you know, multiple amendments with a plan and not be able to restate it for fear that they might lose the effectiveness of their favorable determination letter. So we're seeing, and definitely what we're working with our plan sponsors is, how do we restate the plan document? How do we assist them on that with making sure that the plan is updated based on, let's say, the last Internal Revenue Service list of required modifications? Also, by incorporating all the amendments that have been done in the plan since the last favorable determination letter, but also how does that impact the favorable determination letter? So we're starting to see that as employers looking at, what do we do with this plan document and how do we make it so that we can use it, incorporate all these amendments, have a restated document, but also make sure that it's qualified.
What do clients need to be aware of in the coming year or the next few years?
Well, I think definitely with the Department of Labor, this is something that I think, and hopefully plan sponsors have been aware that they are investigating plans. And if they're not, they're investigating plans and they will continue to do so. What I think our clients need to be aware of is that it's not the DOL investigation you may think it was or it is. It is definitely something that is more focused, more detailed. The interviews are at another level. They're not the standard questions anymore. They are looking at minutes, they are looking at documentation, and they are asking very detailed questions. So I think that's something our clients need to be aware of. There's over the past couple of years, I have not seen a whole lot of Internal Revenue Service activity in general with respect to defined contribution plans. And I suspect that is going to change. I think that with the Internal Revenue Service issued, you know, regulations, we just had the hardship distribution regulations, and the timing on that is interesting. We also had the changes to EPGRs, the correction program, which would allow for more self-correction programs. I think as part of all that, we might see an increased focus by the Internal Revenue Service on compliance and qualification issues with respect to defined contribution plans. So I think that's something our clients have to be aware of, you know, to make sure they realize the Department of Labor and the Internal Revenue Service is going to be actively looking at plans. And lastly, I think the idea of state-sponsored plans is something that clients need to be aware of. You know, the different states and mostly small employers will be impacted or affected by these regulations, but more and more states are coming forward with their own retirement plan systems and legislation regarding the state-sponsored plans. And so this is something that clients need to be aware of because it also impacts kind of the effectiveness and how that affects ERISA. I mean, we know 45 years, you know, later, the purpose of ERISA really was to provide this kind of uniform set of regulations and guidance and legal authority for plan sponsors who sponsors employer plans. And so now that we have the states issuing their own guidance, you know, how does that impact ERISA? And really, you know, does that erode some of the protections that ERISA put into place for employers who want to sponsor their own retirement plans? So I think these are a couple of things that definitely clients should be aware of.
Thank you, Heather. We really appreciate your insights.